This is WKOK Sunrise on your station for the best news, talk, and sports. News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
Greetings and welcome on board WKOK Sunrise, the interview portion of our program. Rob Center, our fabulous producers on the other side of the glass, so all is where it should be on a Monday morning. Matt Catrillo's over in the newsroom, and he's clackety-clacking away, keeping an eye on traffic. And he says, so far, so good around here. No problems on area roads or anything like that. So far, so good. We've got the usual slowdown in Sunbury at the traffic lights, and we'll start backing things up on Route 11 in Danville very soon. In the studio with us now, we have Dr. Anne Marie Morse is here from Geisinger. She is one of the researchers there and is working on a stages, a sleep study, a national sleep study based at Stanford University, right?
Yes. Stages actually stands for the Stanford Technology Analytics Genomics of Sleep. And so basically what it is, it is exactly what you described. It's a large nationwide study. We're looking over all the sites, which include Stanford University, Geisinger, MedSleep in Toronto, Canada, St. Luke's in St. Louis, Missouri, Mayo Clinic, as well as Bogan Sleep Lab. We're looking to recruit about 30,000 patients over all of those sites. And this is for us to have a better understanding of not only the factors that contribute to developing a sleep disorder, but also what are the consequences of a sleep disorder, both from a cognitive perspective as well as a health perspective.
All right. So you are a pediatric neurologist also?
Yes, I am.
And I can call you a sleep expert?
Yes, sure.
Okay, fantastic. All right. And you brought one of your researchers with you.
Yes.
Christine Blessing is here, project manager and one of the researchers at Geisinger. I just know her as one of the good people on the other side of the church where I go, Zion Lutheran Church. So Welcome aboard, Christine. Thanks for coming in. I appreciate that. When it comes to this stage of study, what are you working on? Sort of explain the part that you're digging into right now, Christine.
Sure. So I get to be one of the people that are sort of on the front lines. We work with a team, about seven of us, led by Dr. Morse, and we're the group that's reaching out to people, seeing if they're interested, if they're a good fit for the study. And then we take the time to go and meet with patients, walk them through the different study activities, and hopefully make sure they have a good experience with research at Geisinger.
Now, sleep has to be one of the most studied things in history, right?
So what's interesting about sleep is that it really is a relatively young field in terms of a discipline. It's only since about the 1960s that there have been people who really have studied it. If you look historically, many times sleep has been referenced as kind of this period of inactivity, and it was relatively viewed as something that wasn't really contributory. It was just kind of this unnecessary component, and then people happen to lapse into this kind of quote-unquote temporary coma, and it wasn't a period of anything contributing to health maintenance or necessary medical need. And so since the 1960s, when REM sleep first was actually identified, there has been kind of a build on having more evaluation and identification. It wasn't until the late 80s that things like CPAP, for instance, were identified as a tool that can be used for sleep disorder breathing or sleep apnea that most people would recognize. So people who snore have episodes of stopping breathing. Since the 1980s, I think that we have continued to see this explosion of recognizing the strong relationship between good sleep health and the impact on someone's health outcomes. And I think now what we're seeing is a deeper dive into that, of really trying to individualize what are the effects, because we really are identifying that people who have either inadequate sleep due to sleep restrictions or poor quality sleep, so people who have restless leg syndrome, sleep apnea, things like that, have really significant deleterious health outcomes, including stroke, heart attack, hypertension, atrial fibrillation. So a lot of things that have really meaningful negative health care outcomes.
So we're really playing catch-up. While I say there's a lot of sleep studies underway, that's only because I'm only looking at the present time. We're playing catch-up, really, and what is sort of a keystone to health dilemmas and so on?
Yes, yes. So you mentioned earlier I'm a pediatric neurologist, and that's part of the reason I went into sleep medicine as an additional fellowship and subspecialty, is because one of the things I recognize is greater than 50% of patients who have neurologic conditions have a sleep-wake disorder. disorder. In some conditions, we see up to 100% of specific conditions have a sleep-wake disorder. When you talk about the normal trajectory of the growing, developing brain, there is a very strong overlap between the number of hours of needed that for sleep and the quality of sleep and the timing of the sleep. And we see kind of the inverse as we're kind of going in the opposite direction, as we're at the aging brain and there's expected kind of deteriorations. We see there's a reduction in the amount of sleep. So there's so much exploration right now and really trying to understand why is that. And it really is a critical piece of understanding brain health and also other health outcomes.
All right. Well, we're going to keep talking about that aspect of this, the pediatric angle of this. Christina, are you looking for more people for the stages study? Do you want more people to participate in the sleep study?
Yes. We're just getting started, actually. So we've enrolled just over 200 people. Our goal for Geisinger is 11,000 over the next 3 years or so. So yes, we would love people who are interested or worried about their sleep as they're coming through Geisinger and talking to their doctor. You may hear from a member of our team about this study.
All right. And so who would people contact if they want to participate in this or they want to find out more?
Sure. So there's a couple ways that people can get in contact with our team. You can always give us a call. We'd love to talk to you. Our study phone number is 570-214-1651. We also have a really nice page on the Geisinger.org website that gives a run through of the different activities that are involved. You can learn a little bit about the different sites as well as reach out to the team that way. And that website is Geisinger.org/stages.
All right, STAGES is the website. So Geisinger.org stages, and then the 214-1651 telephone number. And you are really looking for folks. What if you think you sleep relatively normally? You know, you go to bed at 10 o'clock, get up at 8 o'clock, and that'd be a long hour, a little too much sleep maybe. But in any event, what if you think your sleep is normal? Do you want folks with normal sleep to contact you?
Well, so for this particular study, we're enrolling people who there's some sort of suspected sleep-wake disorder. So their doctor has referred them to sleep medicine, and then from there they've been referred to an in-lab sleep study. But, you know, it never hurts to talk to your doctor. We do see people who think they're sleeping just fine or think that feeling tired is the norm, and that's how everyone feels. So it never hurts to have the conversation to see if you're getting the sleep you need.
Is there anybody who gets a normal sleep?
Well, I think that is actually becoming fewer and fewer. And we're seeing that is a nationwide trend. So if you were to look at the early 1900s, the average adult slept around 9 hours. Currently, the average adult is sleeping between 5 and 6 hours, which is grossly under...
Five?
Yeah, grossly under the needed amount of sleep for an average adult, which should be between at least 7 and 9 hours of sleep a night.
Well, let's open the frequently asked questions section of our interview then. What happens if you only get 5 or 6 or 7 hours sleep? Even I know that's too little.
Sure. So there's several consequences that occur with chronic insufficient sleep. All of us have episodes where we just had that one bad night's sleep. So I don't want to cause unnecessary worry of if that's that one off and you get 5 hours of sleep one night. You're going to be fine because likely during that day, your sleep pressure or your need to go back to sleep is going to be so high the following night, you'll probably have a really great night's sleep. But if that tends to be your trend, where you're sleeping 5-6 hours a night, that can be a sign of multiple different types of sleep disorders. Most people would say, oh, I must just have insomnia. But there's some patients who they have a difficult time falling asleep, but then they also have a difficult time staying asleep. And that can be representative of a variety of other sleep conditions, such as restless leg syndrome, obstructive sleep apnea, or others. When you continually have this type of sleep debt, so inefficient amount of sleep, it does increase your risk for a lot of different medical consequences, as I had mentioned earlier. So with blood pressure issues, increases your risk for diabetes, increases your risk for obesity, as well as heart attack, stroke, and a lot of other poor outcomes. Never mind those things, it also makes you feel very lousy. And that's really something that people underestimate. So many people will say, oh, I'm a little bit tired, I'm going to go drive, I'll just roll down my window, turn up my music, and I'll be okay. That does nothing if you're sleep deprived. Studies have repeated repeatedly demonstrated that it greatly impairs what we call your psychomotor vigilance, which means your reaction times. So if you're a person who's chronically sleep deprived and you're operating heavy machinery or driving a car, you actually are performing at the same reaction speed as someone driving under the influence of alcohol and can be held at the same liability of that. So there really is significant consequence related to that chronic sleep deprivation.
Well, and I've heard of people that kind of do like a mini nap or something. They literally fall asleep for 10 seconds and kind of re-wake. But of course, you, in a car or operating machinery, you'd be way down the road. Sure. All right. Well, before we're going to end this segment in a moment here, but the very basics for a good night's sleep. Let's get those in this segment. We'll delve into those in greater detail later. But how do I get a good night's sleep?
So first and foremost, I think the most important thing is having a regular bedtime routine. So that is allowing your body and your brain to have a signal that daytime activities are over and you need to switch over to kind of that rest and relaxation mode. So making sure that 30 to 60 minutes prior to the desired bedtime that you establish kind of the same thing that you do every night. Many people make the mistake of watching TV or playing on their tablet or cell phone, where unfortunately the both the content of the activity that you're doing generally can be very wake promoting, but also the light emitting from those devices can be very wake promoting. Specifically, the wavelength, the blue light, tells the eye to talk to the brain and say it's daytime. Don't produce your brain's own melatonin, which is our sleep promoting hormone. So the type of activities that one should do: take a shower, a hot bath, read a boring book, listening to lulling music, do some light stretching, and don't get into your bed physically until you're really feeling sleepy. If you're laying in bed and you feel like it's been 20 minutes, not because you keep checking the clock, get out of bed and redo those activities. Sometimes you have to do this a couple of times before breaking these bad habits, but ultimately, if you stick with it, you will achieve a better night's sleep.
All right, we're not quite in bed yet, so I got to stop you there, but we'll finish this. The first part is a little bit less light, a lot less blue screen wouldn't hurt anything, so maybe some less sound also. And but we'll ask about night lights and other things when we come back. But at this point, we're establishing a sleep routine, which is going to help us. So all right, we'll keep that up. Dr. Anne Marie Morris is here. She is a Geisinger pediatric neurologist and a sleep specialist, and she's heading up Geisinger's participation in a major stages sleep study, which somewhere down here in my note explains where that is, based at Stanford School of Medicine. And, well, I can't find it in here. There it is, Stanford Technology, Analytics, and Genomics in Sleep. There we go, right, stages study. Well, and I think you mentioned the word genomic, or they mentioned genomics in there. We're going to find out, you know, did I inherit not needing as much sleep or something like that? We'll ask that question. When we return, we have Dr. Anne Marie Morse here, and we have Christine Blessing, the project manager, and researcher at Geisinger.
From news across the world to events in your community, hear about it all on WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
And thank you so much for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. We're right in the middle of our interview with Dr. Anne Marie Morse. She is a Geisinger pediatric neurologist and a sleep expert, and she's the go-to person for the STAGES study that's underway, Stanford Technology, Analytics, and Genomics in Sleep. And she and a lot of other entities are working on this study. They have, I'm told by Christine Blessing, who's with us, the project manager for this and a researcher at Geisinger. They have about 200 people so far, but till all is said and done, they would like 11,000 people involved in this. So you are looking for recruiting. Maybe if you're concerned about your sleep, you know darn well your sleep is terrible, or your sleep hygiene's awful, or you just can't sleep, you're going to be ideal for this if you have one of those on your checkoff box that you don't sleep well.
Yeah, so if you are interested in talking to your doctor, they think you should go through sleep medicine and see if you have any issues with your sleep, then our team will probably be reaching out to you. Participation in this study usually takes a little under 2 hours. You meet with a member of our team, and we run through quite a few different activities. We look at your neurocognitive, we do like a computer game, so we have you check your reflexes, your memory, things like that. We take a 3D image of your face, so we're really looking at measurements that may be related to sleep disorders. And then we'll give you an activity tracker really nice device that you wear on your wrist. It attaches or it connects to your cell phone, and it allows you to track not only your sleep during the night, but also your steps, your heart rate. All of that stuff comes up on your cell phone, so it's a really nice tool that you can have for tracking your health that then you get to keep if you're in the study.
All right, and we should shoot for, Dr. Morse, 7 or 8 hours of sleep as adults per day. Is that about right?
So the average adult generally needs about 7 to 9 hours of sleep per night, yes.
All right, and who gets that? Well, 7, there's probably quite a few people who get that.
Sure. So it seems as though less and less people are getting the appropriate number of hours of sleep. And many times it's because one of the things that most of society views is that sleep is something they can get away with less of because there's so many other daytime activities that they have competing with sleep. And so between work and maybe parenting and any other extracurricular type of things that people want to do, they generally kind of put sleep to the wayside until they start realizing the consequence of not getting enough sleep.
Now, if people participate in the Stage of Sleep study, will they come to Geisinger and sleep for you, or this tracker will take care of the sleep monitoring?
So we're interested in people who are referred for an in-lab sleep study. So they're already, their doctor has decided that they need to take a real close look at how people are sleeping. So we kind of piggyback on that by doing some of these extra activities. And then you wear your activity tracker during that sleep study as well. So we can kind of look at what's coming through your fitness tracker versus what we're seeing in the clinical sleep test.
All right, fantastic. The telephone number to call if you're interested in knowing more about the sleep study, 570-214-1651. That's 214-1651. And you can go to geisinger.org/stages because the stages is the name of the sleep study. All right, when we last spoke, we were in the middle of a good sleep routine, which starts about an hour before bed and involves less light, less screen time, less TV, sound, light, lights, night lights, all lights. I mean, you can have a little light on, I guess, in the bathroom, but that's it. All right, so now we're ready to actually go to bed. So now what?
So once a person's ready to go to bed and they've done their regular bedtime routine, I think one of the most important things for people who are having difficulty falling asleep is recognizing negative patterns that they may engage in that prevent them from falling asleep. So many people who have insomnia, for instance, generally participate in activities of worrying, watching the clock, thinking about their schedule for the day, the next day, thinking about things that they could have done today and or maybe missed out on doing. And generally, there's a big component of anxiety or poor behaviors that are contributing. So it becomes this self-fulfilling prophecy of I need to get a night of sleep, but then as soon as I get into bed, even though I was sleepy sitting on the couch, I go lay down in bed, and now my brain turns on and I can't stop thinking. And then I turn over and I look at the clock and I go, oh, I'm only going to get 8 hours of sleep if I fall asleep right this second.
It's happening again.
Exactly. And so they then will keep looking at the clock, and that just further adds to their anxiety. So many times we do engage in something called cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia for patients, and that's really helping patients learn behavior-directed tools to help them kind of reduce those influences. The goal is to avoid hypnotic medications to make them go to sleep and really help them to learn their own skill set to be able to help them to fall asleep easier.
All right, so seven, and once you get to sleep one way or another, 7 to 9 hours for adults. What about a teenager? Did you say 13 hours for some teenager? Or no, 11 for
yes.
some teenagers.
Yes.
Okay.
So one of the things about sleep is that depending on the age of a child, there's different sleep needs. The younger the child is, the more likely there is a higher sleep need. And then the presence of napping, that also varies by age. So up until age 5, napping is acceptable. After age 5, if you see a person napping, that generally is a concern that they're not getting either good quality sleep or enough sleep at night. So that by itself is a red flag. So teachers who are have kids in their class who are falling asleep in school, that's a red flag. Please tell the parents that your child is falling asleep because they need to have some attention there. But yes, the average teenager generally needs between 9 to 11 hours of sleep, which woefully most teenagers are really getting less than 7. And that's many times because of the extracurriculars, but more frequently frequently, it's the constant YouTube or Snapchat or Facebook, Instagram, constant need to be connected. And that greatly is impacting their ability to sleep.
Now, how much the average adult then, 7 to 9 hours? What about a senior citizen? I always think of senior citizens needing less sleep, but sometimes I think maybe they need more sleep. But
sure.
What's the truth?
Sure. So between 18 to 65, we say 7 to 9 hours. And then after 65, we say 7 to 8 hours. Yes, it is true that there are some patients who are greater than 65 who may actually require less hours of sleep. Many times these are patients who have a genetic predisposition to a lesser sleep need. However, we generally do still encourage that patients who are older than 65 to really try and shoot for that 7 to 8 hours of sleep. And if they're having daytime symptoms, so feeling like they're having mental clouding, more forgetfulness, they're feeling that they're excessively somnolent, requiring naps during the day, those are patients that we would want to take a look at and see, can we optimize your nighttime sleep and consolidate it all so that they're having better daytime experience?
Somnolent?
So sleepiness during the day.
Oh, I'm going to have to use that one at home. Honey, I have to go upstairs. I'm feeling very somnolent. I'll be back in an hour. Okay, I'm going to use that one. Well, what about napping? I'd like to take a nap every single day if I could. Less than an hour, but I need one.
You know? Sure. So napping, if you feel that you need to take a nap, then less than 20 minutes or less is really what is optimal. Maybe up to 30 minutes maximum. What happens when you're napping more than that? You're basically taking away from that drive to fall asleep at night. So when you are sleeping for greater than 30 minutes, you're filling that sleep need that your body is starting to build up as the day progresses. And then when you're going to try to fall asleep at nighttime, you're going to find that you're going to have a hard time sleeping. So if you need that power nap, 20 to 30 minutes maximum, and really trying to minimize the number of days a week that you're having that.
All right, 20 to 30 minutes. And then you earlier mentioned a sleep debt. People build up a sleep debt?
Yes. So sleep debt means that the person is awake, they build up a need to be able to want to fall asleep. The debt is generally if a person is chronically having less than appropriate agent a number of hours of sleep. So if you're supposed to be getting 8 hours of sleep a night and you're only getting six, that's a 2 hour sleep debt. One of the mistakes most people think is that, oh, I didn't sleep for 2 hours as much as I need, so I'm going to sleep an extra 2 hours. It's not a one-to-one repayment, however, because as we cycle through sleep at night, there's only certain stages of sleep that provide that repayment. So many times it's for every 1 hour, you might need an extra 3 to 4 hours of sleep. So that concept of catching up on sleep because I owe sleep really doesn't typically get fulfilled.
All right, let's go back to the sleep stages, a study you and Christine and others are working on this. Give us some sort of a sense on what you hope to find out. This study will be a big success if later we know what.
Sure. So the study will be a big success, I think, regardless, because we're going to be gathering a lot of really important information that hasn't been fully explored previously. So some of the information that we're collecting is genetic information, something called genome-wide association studies. This helps us to be able to identify specific genetic information that tells us associative features, meaning that it's not necessarily I have this gene, it causes this, but it tells us that it's associated with other clinical findings. Some of the interesting pieces that we have is the 3D imaging that Christina had referenced earlier. So that's actually giving us a 3D structure of a person's facial features, which will tell us about risk factors specific for something like obstructive sleep apnea. So does someone have maybe a smaller jaw or more flattened cheekbones? That may increase their likelihood of developing sleep apnea. So this information that we're going to collect, it's going to give us a better idea as to why are certain people more at risk for certain types of sleep disorders? And then why is it that some people can get away with that 7 hours of sleep or 6 hours of sleep and perform very well? And others, they have a lesser likelihood for that resilience. And then also the final piece, which I think is most important for people, is why is it that certain sleep disorders cause such significant medical consequence in specific people? And what can we do to prevent these things and help people to better care for themselves?
So, Christina, when you're doing your interview with participants, you are going to then delve into heredity. That'll give you some of the genomic, the first markers of heredity and genomics and environment. You're going to ask about all of those?
Mm-hmm. So one of the exciting tools that we're using is a battery of different questionnaires called the Alliance Sleep Questionnaire. It not only will help us as a research study to really gather extensive information about people's medical history, their sleep history, also a snapshot of their sleep, kind of the moment they take the test, but it also can help their doctor better, determine what treatment they need. We do share that information with their provider so that it can be used to leverage better treatment and hopefully get them quicker treatment as well.
All right. Please reiterate how you're still looking for participants, right?
Yes, we are.
And these have to be somebody with some sort of a mild or significant anomaly in their sleep would be ideal.
Yep. 13 or older, referred by their doctor to sleep medicine. So something's going on. They're trying to figure out what that is. And then you can reach out to our team, talk to us on the phone, 570-214-1651, or check out our website, geisinger.org/stages. We actually have a really nice video on there that will walk you through. You can meet Dr. Morse. It'll walk you through some of the different activities. And it's a really good way to get a sense of, is this study something that you might be interested in?
Well, I only have 1,000 more questions, so we are not going to have time for them today. But I really do appreciate it. Thank you, Christine Blessing, for coming in, project manager, researcher at Geisinger. Very much appreciated. And Dr. Anne-Marie Morse, a Geisinger pediatric neurologist and sleep expert. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having us.